All right, what's going on, everybody? It's your boy Juju, aka Straw Hat Goofy, here with another episode of Get Wrecked with Straw Hat Goofy. And with Straw Hat Goofy now, that's a lot of Straw Hat Goofies. I'm realizing that. I'm here with Justice Smith, star of the American Society of Magical Negroes. It's going to be a very interesting conversation.
That is the word of the day. Everyone has been saying it was interesting. Interesting.
Wake up, Juju. Time to go to work. All right, can we talk about it? Wake up, I get it, I get it, I go. With everyone saying I'm up next, it's not my fault that the vocals are gold. I'm making the haters so upset. My life is a movie, the way that I roll. They saying I'm goofy, but baby, you know I'm making everybody obsessed. Cause we the best, how we get wrecked. And I know we gonna get wrecked, 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 we gonna get wrecked.
I remember first seeing the trailer for the movie, man, and I was just kind of like, oh, they went there. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's not very often you get the Negro pass and the N-word pass.
The Negro pass. Listen, they fought for it. You know, it's the term. You know, it's the coined term is magical Negro.
So, yeah.
I think people didn't know what that term was, so all they just saw was Negro, and they were like, what? Mm-hmm. Well, originally they thought it was like Black Harry Potter.
No, a lot
and
of people
I was
did,
like,
yeah.
What did we settle for? Yeah. You think Black Harry Potter would be called magical Negroes? Like, I'm so hyped.
Honestly, like, if they made, like, a spinoff Harry Potter movie with, like, the one black kid that just appears in the movie.
Oh, with, yeah, what's that guy?
Dean Thomas.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? And just say, hey,
yeah.
Magical Negro, bro. Yeah. Like, we got... Yeah. I'd watch it.
We deserve so much more than that. But talk
about that a little bit, though, because, like, when I saw the trailer for this, like, it was immediately met with, like, a lot of conversation of what they thought the movie was going to be about.
Yeah.
And very clearly you're aware of that. So can you talk a little bit about just kind of, like, the fan reception of the movie being announced?
Yeah, I wasn't on, you know, I try to stay offline because social media is not good for my soul. But
me neither.
You know, obviously I was aware of the backlash and my team was telling me about it. And obviously everyone else on the movie was telling me about it. I'm empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
I was empathetic. You know, at first I was like, ah, damn. But then I was like, specifically with black audiences, like Hollywood has not done right by black people.
Yeah, absolutely.
So of course we're skeptical of what like movies about race are going to be and like, you know, there's a real scarcity, I think. We kind of have like a scarcity mentality when we see like a black film come out into the zeitgeist because we're like, oh, that's going to be our only black film this year.
Right.
You know,
right,
and
right,
it's like,
yeah.
Well, no, black art is like...
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere. And I mean, it should be more, obviously, but like it can also be multiple things. Like it doesn't have to be like have this like checklist of like what we've seen before, you know?
Yeah.
But I think like... There was a couple controversies, so I don't even know which one you're referring to. But...
Honestly, like, I didn't even, I try to stay offline as much as possible,
yeah.
Even though being, like, an online personality, so it's, like, a little difficult. But I do pretty well to just kind of, like, skirt a lot of those type of things and just kind of, like, talk about the movie at hand.
Yeah.
Which is, like, again, you said, what did you expect when you, like, found the title of the movie, Black Harry Potter?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I'm digging the idea of a rom-com that tackles the idea of the Spike Lee coined like magical Negro. I think that's very, very interesting, right? And I find it very weird, like when you have like movies, like comic book movies nowadays, and people have expectations and they think it's going to be this, and when it's not, they have problems. This one, I don't think there's a book based off of this, right?
No.
I think this is just a completely original
satire.
Thing. Exactly.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it was birthed. He originally had like thought it was going to be a sketch, Kobe. And then he was like, as he was writing it, he just started pouring so much of his own black experience into this metaphor, and it became a feature film. And when I read the script, I was like, I relate to this. This is such a like shameful thing to admit, but I relate to this. You know, I relate to the ways in which I've had to make myself small for white people in order to survive socially or literally, survive. You know, the classic example is, you know, as black men were taught, when you encounter white policemen, like, put your ego aside, put your pride aside, yes, sir, smile, be friendly, you know? Like, we all know that example, so it's kind of just, like, taking that idea and spitting it on its head. I mean, taking the magical Negro trope, which are these characters who, you know, only serve white people, like, only come to, like, fulfill their dreams, and using it as, like, this metaphor for the ways black people have to make themselves... have to compromise their identities to survive.
And I think a rom-com is like almost perfect for that because one, it's not as like they use this example in the film, which I saw and I really enjoyed you in that film, but it's not as heavy as like, you know, the usual cop metaphor that people usually go to when they think of those type of like instances, but it's something a little bit smaller, which is as simple as like love, like trying to like find a girlfriend or trying to get a job. And it tackles those little things within the same context of put your hands up, make people feel comfortable, because at the end of the day, this is a guy who just simply wants to be with a girl, but he's giving like a piece of himself up in order to make like his coworker happy. And I like what you said about like making yourself feel small, because like watching your performance in this movie, you could tell that obviously your character is very aware as a black man of what's going on and how he has to interact, but you can tell he's like also bottling it up a lot throughout the film. And I don't want to spoil anything, but there's like a scene, you know what I'm talking about, on a stage where everything just pops off. And that was one of the most realest scenes that I've seen like in a film this year, of just coming from a black man and just raw emotion, just kind of like, this is what we have to deal with. And honestly, like, and I'm gonna say this right now, it reminded me a lot of the America Ferrera scene in Barbie.
I got that before too.
Yeah,
it's just laying out truth, you know. And Kobe wrote it so beautifully, and so when I performed it, all I had to do was be honest and present. I was like, I don't gotta do no research.
It was like
an
overlap right there.
This is exactly what I think. So, you know, the movie's more than just the rom com. I think like the love story in it is a tangible example of the ways in which he's had to compromise and sacrifice. But that monologue in itself is not about the love story at all. It's about his position in the world.
It's about finding himself. That's what
it's about, finding himself.
Yeah.
And it's about, you know, he exists in this vicious cycle that I have been familiar with, growing up in a homogenous white environment in Orange County, California.
Oh, you're from Orange County.
Woo! Red County. Ooh. White city. Okay.
I grew up in Compton, so you had a similar but different experience to me, because I couldn't imagine.
No, I did not have, let's say, I did not have reference for what black success looked like, for what it meant to be a black adolescent, like growing up. Like, it was in my hometown in Anaheim, it was mostly Mexican, which was a little bit easier because, you know, brown,
get it. Yeah,
you know, like I wasn't being bullied for being black, I was being bullied for being a nerd. You know, so I was like, okay. But then when I went to this art school, this like in Santa Ana, but it was like with all kids from Irvine, all these like white kids from Irvine who were the offspring of like really conservative parents, but they were like trying to be liberal artists, but you know, that's the world they grew up in, so of course they're gonna say some shit. I became so aware that I was a black man in America. Well, I was a black boy in America,
right?
Because I was being or at least like the detriments of that. Like, I didn't experience like the joy of being black in America.
Right,
like,
right.
I didn't experience that till much later. But I internalized a lot of the messaging that I received from my white peers. And there was so much self-hate. There was so much without language to explain what was happening to me. You know, and it was only after high school, after I left Orange County, that I was like able to connect with community and like define my blackness for myself and like have that empowerment. But throughout my adolescence, I understood Aaron's vicious cycle. You know, I understood this character's vicious cycle of, I feel so uncomfortable, and I can't explain why, but I feel so uncomfortable, so my tactic is to appeal so that maybe I'll feel less uncomfortable. But then indirectly, that's now allowing them to continue to disrespect me,
right?
Which then makes me more uncomfortable.
Feeding the beast. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So I knew how to play those layers, and I mean, it's funny that like he's in that vicious cycle, and then in a twisted way, it becomes a talent of his when he gets indoctrinated into the society, which is the satire part.
Right, right.
We're not saying appease white people, okay? Everyone on Twitter who hasn't seen the movie.
I mean, the movie isn't saying that very clearly. I think it makes a very clear like point.
I think people were triggered by that. You know, they were like, why would we want to see appease whites the movie? Like, why would
watch
we want
to see
that? Like, watch it. Obviously, that's not the message of the film. There was this
some
one.
People may learn some stuff, man. Like, I'm just saying.
There was this one. I don't read reviews, but like someone told me about this one review, and so far a lot of the reviews have been good, but there are it is divisive. You know, it's a controversial fucking film.
I mean, but some like I feel like when it comes to film in general, like a lot of our personal experiences play into how we view a movie. Right? Like, there's some movies that I just 100% was just like, this film is like trash. Like, not to like get super off topic, but The Invitation, can't get into that movie at all. Yeah, couldn't get into it. And it's not that the movie is bad. It's just that as a black man, I couldn't see myself in that situation. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, it's like group of white people. Clearly, they're like, this is a cult. And then they get surprised when the cult starts doing cult things. I'm like, I would have been out of that as soon as I saw, like, the weird guy that's not part of my friend group just hanging out, you know, saying weird things. Right. So I feel like a lot of, like, personal experience plays into that. And I feel like when it comes to a lot of, like, critics and reviews, and, you know, we're talking about this movie, that experience is going to play into, like, how they view this movie. It's going to be like, I didn't get it. I didn't understand it. And, like, people like me and you, like, it hits on, like, a different level. Because, as you said, you're acting it, but you lived it.
Yeah,
and
but
I'm watching it. Yeah,
you know, it's not as divisive across color lines though. Like that's the gag is that it's, you know, there's white critics who love it, there's black critics who love it, and there's white critics who don't get it, and there's black critics who don't get it. You know, and there was this, you know, a part of that. I'm not saying this is everybody who doesn't get it in terms of black critics, but this is a really confronting message. You know, doing this press tour. There's been a lot of people who voiced like, I do this and I don't want to admit that. There was this one man who said, I was uncomfortable watching the movie because I didn't know if I was uncomfortable because I don't see myself in this or if because I do see myself in this and I don't want to admit
different
that.
Ways of uncomfortability that this movie kind of hits you at.
Yeah. No one wants, everyone wants to be Malcolm X. We all want to be, especially in the black community, we want to be the radical. We never compromise ourselves. We're black and we're proud. Mm-hmm. And those are the movies we see, you know, when we have movies about race, it takes place in the civil rights era or slavery era. And at some point, it shows our hardships. It shows, you know, how we're victims of these systems, but then we overcome it somehow.
Right, right.
We're empowered somehow. And Kobe wanted to champion the people who've just survived, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's okay that you made yourself small and, like, in these moments, it's not your fault. It's the system's fault.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I know I could have used this film when I was a kid.
Absolutely.
When I was growing up in that environment, I could have used this film to be like, oh, I'm not alone. Like, I'm not... Like, a lot of people experience, a lot of black people experience this in white spaces.
Oh, absolutely, dude. I just told you, like, how, like, you and I had, like, almost, like, the reverse experience, because you grew up in Orange County, like, predominantly, like, you said, brown, like kind of community.
In my immediate, but then when I went to school, it was mostly white kids.
Right. So, me, I grew up in Compton, and then, you know, went to college, and then I ended up going to, like, work for this advertising agency in Playa Vista, super white space, right? And as someone from like Compton, like fully black through and through, it was hard for me to adjust and be in those spaces. And looking at the setting of the film, it was like a visceral like reaction of just like, oh my God, I've been in this space where I had to kind of like tiptoe around everybody, watch what I say. Like I've said things that I would say in my hood all the time, and then I get the side eye, and then I'm just kind of like, okay, now I got to switch that up, right? And then dealing with like the almost like they have to create these like meetings and these like activations in-house to prove that they're you know accepting of everybody and so like watching this like I feel what you're saying is like I'm someone who survived the people who fought for me back in the day we're normal people just like living in this society and I feel like more films like that is what, like you said, Kobe really wants to do, right? So I really feel that.
Like that is the satire. Like that is and on top of it, it's a comedy.
Yeah.
Like there's a dire press story of like, we're talking about heavy things, but it's also funny.
Yeah.
Like it's a comedy.
Yeah.
But I think the reason why we have to talk about all this stuff is because it's a really nuanced message that he's trying to get across and it's confronting and it's triggering to white people and it's triggering to black people. And there's like a, you know, a lot of, when I was in Atlanta, there was a lot of people who connected with the film and there were people who didn't. And I think a lot of the people who connected it with it were black women and there was black men who connected with it as well. But the most resistance we got was from black men. And I think it's because as black men, we don't want to admit moments of weakness.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
like we are constantly expected to live up to this masculine standard and to like see ourselves being represented as soft, as mm-hmm. as, you know, like my character is a yarn smoker, yeah, you know, like yeah. Constantly apologizing, making himself small, like that's confronting, you know. Mm-hmm. And I listen, I believe that there are black men who's like, I've never done that. Yeah. I would never do that. I believe that. Mm-hmm. And for them, I'm like, great.
Right.
But some of the reactions, it almost felt defensive.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah. Oh, this has hit a button in you. Like that, like, I'm happy that you're now going to go home and like explore. And maybe that's just that. Like through hating the movie and whatever and thinking about all the reasons why you hate it. But at least it started a conversation within your body,
which is what like a movie with a message like this is supposed to do. Right?
Yeah.
It's to get that reaction to make you feel something and then like hopefully like marinate on it. And then, you know, the movie's did its job at that point.
Yes.
You know,
that is the goal. You know, it's anyways.
Well, to get out of the heavy really quick, to get out of the heavy, man, like you said, this movie's a comedy. Like, what were some of like those moments in the film that like was obviously there's a lot of situational moments mm-hmm. here that like obviously ties from real life. Like, what were some of those, like, without spoiling a lot, situational moments that made you go, that is good. Like, I really want to bring that to life.
When I first read the script, situational moments, like which specific scenes you're talking about?
Yeah, is there like a specific scene that just made you like cackle, where you said like, I gotta bring this to life and make people like feel how funny this is?
I mean, there is. I don't want to spoil them because they're really good, but it's funny because like I didn't even really, when I was reading it, I didn't even really think about the humor of it,
right.
Like I think I do a lot of movies where like a lot of comedies and stuff and like when you're playing comedy, you just play the truth of it. And if it's funny, it'll play, you know? So I think like the comedy isn't what really drew me in. It was the overall metaphor. And like I think about one of my favorite scenes to play was, I'm also always looking for like flawed characters, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And we can get into there's a whole reason why I look into flawed characters that I won't
We gonna get into that because there's some flawed characters I would like to talk about.
Okay, great. And but there's a scene where we're in the bar. It's me, my love interest, and my client.
Yes, I know the one.
Yeah, and he's explaining why people of color didn't make the team. Mm-hmm. You know, and
I thought about it for a minute.
It's a conversation that I've had before. You know, and like and their response. It's these two people of color. Their response is to make him feel better, you know, this is their friend and they make him feel better, even though he's slighting them, he's disrespecting them. And then they have to unpack that in the car. And it's just about like, and it's, I'm like, this is so fucking, this is tea. Like, this is what we do. It's like when I'm with my friends and we're navigating white spaces and we're like, oh, and we go in the car and we have to heal.
Yeah.
We have to sit there and heal.
Hold space conversation, for each other
hold
in
space
that moment.
And being like, what happened? Like, why do I feel like shit? Why do I feel so bad? Mm-hmm. Like, I wish I said this. I wish I said that. Like, that was really, like, that was one of the most powerful scenes to me. And that sold me on it.
I like that scene a lot. Like, I remember watching it. Mind you, I'm, like, watching it in bed. So I'm just, like, I hear the guy says, I thought about it for a full 5 minutes. And I went,
yeah,
this motherfucker. Like,
and now I'm over it.
And now I'm over it. I said, if I had like a nickel for every time I heard some shit like that,
exactly.
It really like hit on a different level.
Exactly.
Before we go any further, I have like two Gatorades over here because we're G. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, would you like red or blue?
I would like, I would like red. I was literally I was looking at them the whole time. I'm thirsty.
I was like, I didn't get this guy something to drink. But I remember I did have some forethought and said, let's get the good stuff. Let's get the big one. So you got the choice. Also, I remember I was at a press junket for Dungeons & Dragons. You were in a room with Sophia. And you screamed out about some cookies. And I was like, this guy loves some cookies. So I also went down to the snack room. I got you some Chips Ahoy.
Thank you.
That we can just eat and chill. And
this is like, amazing.
You know?
I can't eat it right now. So
I'll eat it right now.
It's my
show.
I got my Invisalign in.
Oh.
So when I eat things, I have to do this whole thing. I got floss and brush.
Okay.
I got like a month or two left.
I'll eat it for the both of us then.
Yeah, it's funny because on this whole tour, it's like all these cameras are like up in my face and I'm like smiling or laughing. And like all the comments on the videos are like, what's wrong with his teeth? Why you got braces in? I'm like, stop. Leave me alone.
I'm trying to fix it. I'm trying to look better for you guys.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh, man. I'm
trying to get my teeth right.
Guys, leave him alone.
Yeah. Okay. Leave me alone.
You look good. You always look good.
Thank you. Appreciate you. Mm. Appreciate you.
All right, so I shouldn't have did that because now I got to talk. I shouldn't have just backfired in a major way. But I want to play a little game, and I don't usually do games, but like,
okay, cool.
I feel like you're a homie. I feel like at this point, like, we've seen each other enough. We've been at parties and we dance together. We're homies mm-hmm. now. So this trope, the magical Negro trope, was coined by Spike Lee. Right. Yep. And for those guys who don't know, since we've been talking about it for like, what, 20, 25 minutes now, it's a trope in Hollywood where like there's a quote unquote magical black person mm-hmm. who serves only to like appease white people mm-hmm. or like help white people. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to name some names mm-hmm. and you let me know if they're a magical Negro or not. All right.
These are names from film?
Name from film.
You're messy. It's so messy. Literally like all of our like... The like in our press talking points are like, try not to name like other films that which did, and I'd be in the interviews being like, is this one, is this one, is this one? Okay, let's do it. It's fine.
All right, great. I mean, the movie already lends itself to it. So yeah. All right, this is my favorite one, and it's number one, Kazam.
I haven't seen that.
You haven't seen Kazam?
That's right. He's like a genie.
Yeah.
I saw the poster on the plane. I was gonna watch it.
Ooh.
Is he a magical Negro? I mean, who's the main character of the movie?
Little white kid who's just trying to see his dad.
Magical Negro.
Magical Negro. Got it. See, I would argue, I would say yes, but I would go with the argument of he's kind of a genie. He's like an otherworldly being who's mm-hmm. taken the form of a black person. So is he
magical
like,
Negro?
Magical Negro.
Yeah.
All right.
Same with like that one movie. Bruce Almighty.
Oh,
it's like, Freeman. It's God.
Yeah, but...
But no, it's a magical... There's a reason why he was cast. Because these white people are like, I want him to take care of me. Because they see us as that, you know? It's the mammy trope or the Uncle Ben trope.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Take care of me. Like, give me wisdom from your experience.
He's not even on my list. And now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, oh, yeah, he's totally like that.
Yeah.
Like, now that we've gotten that out the way.
Yeah.
Okay, so next up, have you seen The Green Mile? You haven't seen The Green Mile?
I know of it.
I will.
Yes, that is classic magical Negro.
Right?
I don't watch a lot of magical Negro movies.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Then I'm gonna just
that's
like
how radical I am.
Well, this is gonna like right. He's like, yo, I never did it. Like the only time I watch is when I'm in one, and it's a satire. Yeah,
exactly.
Well, tell you what, I'm gonna name some names, and you let me know if like they're familiar to you.
Okay. Keep going.
Okay. But Green Mile, fun fact is like the name of Michael Clark Duncan's character in it is John Coffey.
John Coffey.
Mm.
I don't even know what to do with that.
Stephen King, man.
Crazy.
He's wrote a lot of things.
He's literally magical in it. Right?
He's yeah.
Yeah, the, literally. That cupping thing is a
Green Mile reference. which we could talk about some of the won't because it's spoilers, but the references like in that opening.
Yes. Yeah.
Great. Amazing. This was interesting. Hitch in Hitch. He doesn't have powers. However,
he's also the protagonist.
He is the protagonist.
He's helping a white guy,
mm-hmm.
but it's revealing his own flaws. Like
right.
He's flawed. I don't think that's magical. Negro.
Okay, he was listed in Wikipedia as a magical Negro.
I don't think so.
Okay,
because,
great.
Because he Take is the, he's centered. He's helping this guy, and in helping this guy, he's learning how he's wrong. Like he's more of a mm-hmm. human being than a classic magical Negro. Magical Negros, we don't really learn much about them.
Right. They're just kind of like off to the side. They're just kind of
yeah.
like, we don't.
What we do learn about them is only to further motivate the white protagonist. Cool. Like in their struggle. Like sometimes it's like, you know, it's like, it's the transference of like, my black struggle is so mm-hmm. hard, but I got through it. You can get through the SATs or whatever.
Well, in all fairness, he does do that because like, he like has a girlfriend, gets dumped, and he's like, I'm gonna help like these people. But then he breaks out of that. So I would argue maybe he was a magical Negro at first, but this is the first movie where we saw him break out of the trope by the end of the movie.
No, I think he
yeah.
For him to be a magical Negro, he has to be the whole time.
It has to be.
Yeah.
All right. So we're put. See, this is how we like
yeah.
put lines in the sand.
Exactly.
All right. These ones are fun because like I feel like, and when we talk about satire and spoofs, these movies have done like the magical Negro trope as well. And the big one is, have you ever seen Not Another Teen Movie?
like long time ago.
Long time ago with Chris Evans and all those guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's actually two magical Negroes tropes in it.
Really? On purpose.
On purpose.
Yeah.
Mr. T as like the sports football guy who literally appears out of nowhere to give him advice.
Yeah.
And then you have Dion Richmond. Shout out to Dion Richmond from Sister Sister, who plays a character by the name of Malik, who is just the black best friend.
Black best friend. And that's the evolution of the magical Negro.
Right.
I played the black best friend show. Yeah. I played, yeah.
You know?
It's again, yeah. It's the same thing, except they're not magical, but
not magical,
still
but
in
it's the evolution
vein.
Of it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they're just there to support, don't mm-hmm. really know much about them. And he's like kind of fighting to stay the whole, because he's like, I'm the black guy in this party.
Yeah. You know, oh, that's funny. That's very funny.
Which is really great. I remember there was a scene where like he runs into another one. He goes, what are you doing? This is my party.
That's
these
like that Key and Peele sketch. There's a Key and Peele sketch. Like,
people keep
this
talking
is my
about
group
that.
Of white boys. Yeah. Yeah, the acapella group.
That's great. All right, last one, because I know we got to talk about the movie. I'm looking at eyes. They're just like, get back to it. Eddie Griffin has done it twice. And you would say he's like in the evolution of it, which uh-huh. is like the supportive black person helping the white person.
Uh-huh.
Eddie Griffin in this movie called The New Guy.
Okay, never saw it.
It's about this guy.
I don't watch movies, apparently.
I'm a movie guy on TikTok.
I mean, I know that's your whole thing, but apparently, I've never seen a movie in my life.
That's what Get Wrecked is about, man. I'm giving you all the wrecks.
Yeah.
That's
okay. There you go. There you go.
And then Eddie Griffin is also in Deuce Bigalow.
Male Gigolo. Male Gigolo. Oh, I think I remember him in that. Again, yeah. Saw that like when I was very young.
Yeah.
Which I should not have been seeing.
No, I saw that movie very young too. And it
yeah, is he a magical Negro now? I can see him so clearly, but I don't remember what his character is.
I will say that he's a pimp that teaches Deuce how to be a pimp, and he literally just pops out in random moments, like almost magically, and then he like jumps into bushes and disappears and does things like that.
That's crazy. I feel like that's fucked up for other reasons.
It's messed up for a bunch of reasons.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you could tell that it was almost in and of itself like. A commentary on that trope
because
he's almost like aware of it
in
a way.
I
think that was pretty funny.
That's cool.
And then very, very last one, Will Smith's genie in Aladdin.
Listen, you didn't say Will Smith's main one, which is Taylor Backer Vance with Robert Redford.
It's on the list, but I have to like
That's classic magical Negro trope. Like that is the most magical Negro that has ever magical Negroed.
Yeah.
But Genie in Aladdin, I don't know. That's a good question.
It's a good
probably.
Question, right? I feel like he could have, like, he's blue for the most part. Like, it's not like God where he's like in that thing the whole time. It's like, I'm Morgan. Plus, I think that was born from the joke that we see Morgan Freeman as God, or he has the voice of God.
Mm-hmm.
So like, there's no other person we're going to get. Whereas, like, Genie is like, he's like this entity, this like celestial being that's like, I'm gonna just be Will Smith. Because
you know, at the end of the live action one, which wasn't the original, he gives him his freedom, and then he marries that Maxine Pedrad, right?
Yeah.
So like that's kind of his own story. I feel like maybe Will Smith was like, we gotta add some of this in order for it to not just be I'm helping this guy.
Will Smith,
and also the main character isn't white.
True.
That's also part of it.
Yeah, he's helping in a
it's gray.
It's a gray area. I think they did. Okay, we're gonna say right here and now. No on Genie. We're going to say...
I'm going to say maybe.
Maybe. The mystery still continues.
Yeah.
All right. But so speaking of this, so leading up to this role, right? And like you the way you describe this role, it's like it's a way of you to kind of like reconcile with yourself, how you grew up, how you've like reacted to the world around you. Mm-hmm. And then you're able to put this out into like an actual role where you can give that to other people. You just also mentioned that you also played like... in a way, the evolution of the magical Negro and like other roles.
The black
like,
best friend.
The black best friend, mm-hmm. right? Like, if you want, you could talk about those roles. If not, like, is there anything when playing this role you was like, I gotta leave that behind, right? I gotta leave like the black best friend role, or did you take any of that with you?
Absolutely. I mean, me and Kobe, when we were like talking about how Aaron was gonna do his modern version of the magical Negro, you know, like there's that scene where he's trying to do like the old dialect mm-hmm. and he's trying to like use the metaphors from before and it's not working. Like we were always like trying to gauge like the performance. Like I was like, is it like more like Cuba Gooding Jr., like Show Me the Money, like charismatic, like you got this, man. Not saying that that's a magical Negro movie.
Yeah, of course.
But or is it more like, you know, Mahershala Ali, serious, like inspirational, like you know, I'm speaking truth into you. You know, I remember, like that's kind of like the axis that we were like going going off of. And so I think, yeah, definitely, like, I was playing with, like, I mean, essentially, Aaron is Black Best Friend, right, but with powers, mm-hmm, which makes him more, which makes him a magical Negro.
Which makes it cool, though. I like those powers.
I mean.
Computer.
Like. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, we were talking about the quality of the way he's helping these people, and like, mm-hmm, in order to like really make this critique on film and this, yeah, like trope. It was an interesting discussion.
Yeah. I'm really like, I wish I was a fly on the wall in those rooms of like the discussions. Was there anything that maybe was in the movie that you were just kind of like, I want to kind of like play it this way? Like, you know, did you use some of your own experiences to like kind of like pull rank and say like, no, I think we can like do it this way? Was there any like changes?
Yeah, Kobe was incredibly collaborative, and he encouraged improv too, which, mm-hmm, I always prefer when I work.
Right.
Because in order to make it as real as possible, which is my job, you got to massage the language. You know, right, people got to talk over each other. Mm-hmm. You got to have those vocal fillers. You know, so I don't know if I said this yet. My original involvement in the film started at the Sundance Lab. So Kobe invited me out, and we were just workshopping a couple of scenes. And then that was, I think, 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, over a couple of years, I would go to Kobe's house and improv some stuff and, like, rework some scenes. And then he called me in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And was like, hey, the movie's greenlit. We're going to go ahead and do it. Do you want to be a part of it? And I was like, yeah. And I was actually older, because when I first was involved, like, I wasn't old enough to play it yet.
Right.
So it actually all timed out perfectly.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so there's a lot of my improvs that made the final cut of the movie, and the biggest note that I had for Kobe was his acceptance of magic, like, because I knew that the audience had to relate to me, and in the original draft, the character Kobe was like, okay, they're gonna get the conceit from the trailers, like, let's just get into the society,
right?
And I was like, well, Aaron has to still be grappling with the fact that magic exists. You know, before he can really get to the, like,
right,
society of it all. So that was kind of my main pitch, you know, just making sure that we had those, like, bewildered expressions and, like, those lines of, like, I want to go home and, like, you know, all that kind of stuff. So
it's the Harry Potter of it all. It's like you got to introduce him to Hogsmeade.
You're
a wizard, Harry. What? Like, you know? And I like those scenes a lot because, you know, if a guy just kind of appears and he teleports you somewhere, you're just kind of like, the fuck, just,
yeah,
you know,
exactly,
you know,
exactly.
So I'm glad those were in there as
because people have to relate to me, so I have to react the way the audience would react in those situations.
Right. Cool. Yeah. So what I found very interesting was that your love interest in the movie was biracial,
mm-hmm,
right? And then you guys kind of like layered in like that, like, form of living, and then like the relatability, as you said, like whenever we in real life would see those things and then we'll go in a car and kind of like decompress. What was it like kind of like working with her? Did you guys have conversations on these type of things? Like, what did those conversations go like?
A lot of conversations. I mean, Kobe was really intentional once we finalized our cast about making sure it was serving the larger message, and he always talks about, like, it's important political work to spotlight and feature dark-skinned bodies. That's that's very important political work, and it's political work that both me and him are passionate about. And in this specific piece, he felt like it sharpened the critique to have a character, to have an actor as light as me, who's biracial, to have a woman of color who's as light as An Lee, who's ethnically ambiguous, who's biracial, to navigate these spaces as people of colors. You know how black people always add an S to the end of everything?
Yeah.
Oh, you were in Generations. You were in the Jurassic Parks. No, but, you know, like, we're, like, by white societies, like, people who are lighter are viewed as, like, friendlier, and, like, they get more of, like, they have more privileges and, like, all this kind of stuff. And I think what he was commenting on, the whole message of the film is that palatability won't save you.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how you talk, you dress, the music you listen to, you can assimilate as much as you want to, you will not get a seat at that table. You know, and I think like featuring our bodies kind of sharpen that critique.
Right, right.
It's like if even them, who are the most acceptable versions of people of color,
can't get in.
Yeah. Like it's a false promise. Mm-hmm. It's a false promise.
See that? And that tells me that it was very like, obviously like he chose you for the role, but like there's a reason, right? Because that like adds to the message of it, right?
Like, I mean, I also look very much like him. And so,
yeah.
You know, there was conversations when initially when he wanted me to be a part of it, like he had conversations with his producerial team mm-hmm. where they were like, is Justice black enough, you know?
Yeah.
And Kobe was like, well, this is a movie about my experience. And so I want to feature somebody who looks like me, mm-hmm. you know? And that's also why it was such a cathartic experience for me, that because I never worked with a director who looked like me.
Yeah.
I never worked with a director who just fundamentally understood me without explanation,
mm-hmm.
who had a similar upbringing to me.
Yeah.
It was powerful.
That's incredible. I've been wanting to like really like talk to you about this as well, because you know, I feel like you mentioning that you never worked with a director that looked like you. One of my favorite things that you have done was The Get Down
mm-hmm.
on Netflix. I love mm-hmm. The Get Down.
Thank you.
Man, it was incredible, man. And you were like, I just want to say you got to play a young Daveed Diggs. I don't know how many people could like.
No, that's right.
I think there's only maybe two people on the planet that could like. Claim that,
very funny, yeah.
Which is really great. But Baz Luhrmann, like, talk to me about like working with Baz versus like working with Kobe. Like, obviously, mm-hmm. Baz like crafts this world of like hip hop. It's like in New York, and like there's like such an energy to it. But it's a very like cultural thing versus like working with Kobe, who like lived your experience like actually.
Yeah, Baz, I love. You know, Baz is an incredible director. I always relate to directors who direct through character. You know, I don't want to be thinking about the fact that I'm on a set, that I'm, you know, that we have three more takes, that we have another setup. Like, I don't want to be thinking about that. I want to be thinking about the circumstances of the scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to be immersed in the moment. And Baz was all about, like, intention in mm-hmm. character. And obviously, he is the artistic genius that he is. So for the most part, I felt safe with Baz, you know, mm-hmm. like... There is always a layer of, when I work with white directors, there is always a layer of like, you don't fully understand, you know, that's just me with every white person.
you won't
ever fully understand, but Baz did a great job at bringing people on his team who were from the Bronx, who were like around during that time. You know, all my like rap mentor, like Curtis Blow is one of my mm-hmm. rap mentors, and Grandmaster Flash and Raheem from the Furious Five, like mm-hmm. these people were constantly surrounding me, making sure it was authentic. And you know, Baz, he organized that team. Like, he understood mm-hmm. that he could only get into this world so much and that he was going to need help.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that, you know, I appreciate that from an ally, you know, mm-hmm. I appreciate that from a white director, you know, with Kobe. It also helped that The Get Down wasn't about race.
Yeah, no.
You know, it touched on race, like, but like it was about like the power of the black community, John. Yeah. It was about like the ways in which we create art from nothing, like we create culture from nothing, you know. So in that way it was about race, but it wasn't like I didn't have to have direct conversations with Baz mm-hmm. ever about like, you know, the way that this white person is viewing me
Well,
actually later in the series there was conversations like that, because I go into the corporate world
mm-hmm.
remembering that now.
Yeah, yeah.
But that wasn't, Baz didn't direct that episode. But with Kobe, you know, with this movie about race that was like about my specific racial experience in this mm-hmm. like very like specific, you know, microaggressive corporate racism. It was nice to have somebody who just like got it like mm-hmm. deep down, so that we didn't have to. So when we were doing the scenes and exploring the scenes, there was a shorthand we could have.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? We didn't have to go into a whole philosophical discussion about what it means, or you know.
That's really like, honestly, like how often do you have like shorthands with like people that you work with? Because I can imagine, you know, making a movie, as difficult as it is, like in order to make that, there's a lot of conversations that need to be had to get the character right, to mm-hmm. get scenes right, like that. Mm-hmm. But how comforting is it to have like that shorthand, and as opposed to like, was it the most comfortable that you've had?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kobe was one of the best, if not the best, directors I've ever worked with. Mm. Not just in the sense that I felt so seen by him, but also the set was so well organized. Mm-hmm. Like, it was the smoothest set I had ever been on,
yeah.
Which is very rare because, you know, things are constantly going wrong. Like, schedules have to be moved around. Scenes have to be cut.
Yeah.
But it was he allotted so much time for the actors to play. He mm-hmm. organized that. He put that in. He baked that into the schedule so yeah. that we never felt rushed. Like, he prioritized performance over anything, and knew how to, like, talk to each department head mm-hmm. and value them as artists. And even though he had a clear vision, like, listen and mm-hmm. and invite them to have opinions about what's going on. And so everybody wanted to do their best for him, you know.
Incredible.
Which is, yeah, what you want from a director.
Yeah.
But your question was... how many directors do I have that shorthand with?
Was there any other directors that you like had a shorthand with? Like, you could just name one that just like you said, like, oh, this person, like the compatibility is crazy.
Yeah. I've worked with a lot of directors who I really love. You know, I guess if I didn't have a shorthand with them on like racially.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course.
You know, if we viewed art the same, mm-hmm. I felt safe.
Yeah.
You know, I've also worked with directors who are hyper technical and, you know, we don't have a similar opinion about art, and so that was a little bit more of a struggle and required more communication. But I'm very blessed to have worked with people who care about character.
You've done a lot, man. Mm. And I've been watching it. How much time do we have left?
We're probably over. So, like, one more question?
Yeah, and I think we'll get to the big question of this whole podcast, because this is Get Wrecked. And what I like to do is I like to learn a little bit about you based off of like a movie that you saw that like changed the game for you. So I asked you, man, what is like that movie that changed your brain chemistry, that kind of became the building blocks to who you are?
God damn, what, that's so much pressure.
It's a lot of pressure. That's why I love the question.
I have so many movies. Can I just name a couple?
Yeah, even better.
So Boogie Nights is one of my favorite movies of
all
time.
I just saw that for the first time last year.
It's one of my favorite movies. I always revisit it. It's so well done. I so well done. Love him. Love, 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 love. I really like The Exorcist.
Exorcist.
I'm a big horror fan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of movies have really changed. You know, like, what's honestly, Everything Everywhere All at Once.
That, thank you.
That fucked me up.
Thank you.
That changed my life. I saw it 5 times in theaters.
I was like 3. I was a 3 person.
I took everyone I knew to go see it. I cried every time.
Mm-hmm.
I just was like, this is the kind of shit I want to be making. Like, this is, like, it's irreverent.
Yes.
But it's, like, how can a movie that has dildos and butt plugs and hot dog fingers, like, make you cry, like, touch your soul?
It was a win for creativity, like, all across the board.
All around.
Like, I remember when that movie came out, and I ran to my TikTok, and I said, legit, I said, if this movie is not nominated for minimum like 10 awards,
mm-hmm.
like, it's a loss for creativity mm-hmm. for us, mm-hmm. because not only was it able to be irreverent, not only was it able to be surreal, but it was able to tell a very affecting human, like, gut-wrenching story mm-hmm. that everybody could relate to
mm-hmm.
with the dildos and the weird mm-hmm. hot dog hands and stuff like that.
It was the perfect balance of what film should be, which yeah. is that it should be true mm-hmm. and it should be entertaining.
Yeah.
You know?
I love that. And I'm glad that you said that, because again, I feel like it's one of those movies that, like, throughout the test of time, people should go back and say, if you want to get into film and, like, you want your mind to just kind of, like, run wild and inspire at the same time, Everything Everywhere All at Once is, like, is that. You know?
Yeah, fully.
I will also say, like, have you seen Swiss Army Man?
Yeah. Great.
Amazing. That was amazing.
Best soundtrack I've ever heard.
The montage song. Like, I listen to that, like,
oh god, all the time. I literally, like, I had it on my playlist, like, that whole year, that was all I was listening to.
Yep.
Was the album.
Yep. Now we're building a fire.
Oh,
we're
my talking. God. Don't even get me started. You know what's also kind of just changed my brain chemistry recently? Mm. Poor Things.
That's my number one like Oscar like thing right now.
I hope it wins everything.
I really do too.
That's one of the best movies I've ever seen.
That was my number one movie of the year until like I like had to do like a rejigger and like it's like Spider-Verse Poor Things.
I didn't see the Spider-Verse.
I love Across the Spider-Verse. And again, that's like the bias in me because I love Spider-Man.
I like the first one, so I was scared to watch the second.
I think you'll love the second one. It's a middle movie, so like it like sets up like another one.
My friends didn't like it that much.
Really? I have friends who love it. I have friends who hate it. I think you should like watch it, give your opinion on it. I think it's like cinema at its finest.
Okay.
I think it's all right. What Metro Boomin does with the soundtrack, what it does with like art and animation, it pushes the boundaries. I think about that movie and I like get moved.
Oh, you know what I just watched? Okay, I'm literally giving so many answers to your question. On the plane, I watched Origin. Did you see Origin?
I didn't see Origin yet.
That is unlike anything I've ever seen. Really? It's not because it's a genre all of its own. It's like a narrative documentary.
Really?
It is so. You know how when like movies, like you don't want them to be didactic? Like that's the one you're like, don't talk down to me. This movie is didactic and you want it to be. You're like, please teach me. Like the way that it's. The way that it's just structured is like you she's so passionate about teaching that you're like, I will sit here and learn. it's such an interesting genre.
Okay. I don't know if it hits streaming, but I'm still a person who will go and like rent it. Like I will rent the damn thing and like watch it. Because everyone's been talking about it. I was like flying like all over the world at this point, so I didn't get a chance to like stop somewhere and like check it out. Now that you're telling me, it's definitely on my list.
Beautiful film. Beautiful. All right,
for sure. Well, shoot, thank you, man. Like this has been a great like show.
Appreciate you, man.
Real talk. All right, guys, that's it for Get Wrecked with Straw Hat Goofy. I'm here with Justice Smith. Make sure you guys check out the American Society of Magical Negroes in theaters. Like when is the release date? Like plug yourself, bro.
March 15th.
Man, so it's a comedy.
It's a comedy.
Like remember that. Make sure you guys hit that subscribe. Make sure you like follow the podcast on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, wherever you watch or listen to podcasts. It doesn't matter. And we will see you next time when we talk about the next movie.